So I will be doing my proposal presentation titled Proportionality and Flash Caching for Energy Efficient Memory and Storage Systems. So let's get started. First, I want to talk about the energy problem. And so the problem is that I have here a small sample. The U.S. government spent $450 million in 2007 for data centers energy. From those data centers, current most efficient data centers can consume up to 80% only in service. Right? The only other 20% to be cooling power distribution units and some infrastructure. In that service, usually we can break down.
Can you ask them to mute them?
Do what?
Mute them.
Can you please mute the microphone because we're having some feedback? Okay, I think you got it, but you can tell. Okay, so for the server side, we can break down this power even further with the 33% of usually 30% of the CPU. This is a distribution of power when the server is in peak load. Okay? So CPU is usually the one that consumes more. Then you have network, which is only 5%, and all other components, which is 22%. But here in this presentation, we're concerned about RAM and disk, which is both 40% of the power consumption of the servers. Okay? So disk and memory together consume 32% of the data center energy cost.
40%.
No, it's 40 in servers, but if you put it, you know, for the whole data center, would be 32 because this is only 80, right? That would consume 32% of the total energy cost of the data center complete. And in our sample, that would be equivalent to 144 million. Which is a fair number, and then this is only when the server is in peak load. But when the server is not in peak load, which apparently is not the usual case. The usual case is more like 30% of the load. Given that, for instance, the CPU is more proportional to their load, the amount of energy that it consumes with its load. It will be lower, so this 32% will reduce, and this DRAM and disk will increase. Right? So it can get worse than that. And in terms of the price of the energy, the last decade it has doubled the price. So it doesn't seem like that cost is going to come down anytime soon. So energy can be a big problem in terms of cost for data centers. So in this presentation or in this dissertation, we are going to focus on the disk and memory and try to make these two components more energy efficient. Okay, so let's see why disk and memory consume power or how they use their power. Well, first, disks only save power while they are not rotating, otherwise they consume power. And the other thing is that they consume almost a constant amount of power independently of how much work of how much useful work they're doing. Right? In terms of the memory, usually the energy consumed by memory can be decomposed into parts. First, the idle part, which is that the memory, because it's not persistent, the memory has to refresh itself frequently in order to not lose the data that is there, even when the memory is not used. Right? And the other case is the active power, and that is when the memory is used, and usually this is proportional to how much memory is being accessed at that moment. So if most of the memory is not accessed, then it will consume only idle and a small portion of the active and so on.
But I thought it had to refresh everything, even when it's idle.
It has to refresh everything, but that's the idle part. But then when the application is actually requests some data, it has to do some extra work, which lead to some additional active power, right? So I have here a small table explaining samples of how much power consumes each component. So first the disk, with a capacity of 300 gigs, it consumes inactive more or less 16 watts, and in idle 11 watts, which is, in the active and idle are pretty similar. In the case of the RAM, with 8 gigabytes, it's consuming active almost 17 watts, and in idle 6.1, right? So there is a big difference between active and idle, but it's still a fair amount of power consumed in the RAM case, in the idle case, right? And just for comparison, and also because we're using this later, the flash with 32 gigs in active consume only 2.4 watts. And in idle case, because it's persistent, it doesn't have to do any refreshment or anything, it consumes next to nothing. 0.06 watts, which is pretty low. Another thing I wanted to point out, RAM, this power consumption at least idle, will increase linearly with the size of the RAM, right? Because now as we have a bigger memory, we have to refresh more and more, right? Okay, so let's see how people have solved these power consumption problems. In terms of disk, well, if the only way to save power in disk is turning the disk off, then we shouldn't spin down disk when not in use, right? But this has a couple of problems. First, is that the next request that comes to the next request that comes to the disk, it has to incur a delay waiting for the disk to reach its normal rotation and be able to serve the request. On the other hand, by the way, I'm in slide 4. On the other hand, workloads usually do not allow a long idle time to have enough to power off the disk enough time to save some power. Right? So the first one is hard to solve unless we know the future and turn the disk on before the request comes. That's one solution, but I haven't seen a solution for this. For this one, there is another solution that is called aggressive power-aware RAM caching, which basically do more prefetching. It does aggressive buffering, so that the disk is not bothered too much. Right. The problem with this approach is that the memory may not be big enough to hold all the working set. So even though we are increasing the idleness of the disk, there's still some misses which eventually will block the disk and will turn on the disk. Right? The other problem is that the memory is not persistent, so if we don't flush frequently enough, we could lose some data in case of power loss or system crash. So another way of doing this is using an external cache. So now we use a power-efficient device which will extend the memory, and now we can hold a bigger working set size. Right? Right, so with this, we can more or less solve these problems. First, it's bigger, so we can hold a bigger working set size, and this access to an outside log won't happen that frequently, so we can have a longer idle times. And second, since it's persistent, then we can delay the flushing of the blocks longer. Another way to save power on disks is that if we have a multi-disk system, then we can duplicate data all over the disks, and then we can turn off some disks, given that each data can be accessed from a different disk, right? So this is another way. In terms of the RAM, there are two main ways of saving power. First, we increase locality in RAM, and by increasing the locality of RAM, we are effectively reducing the active power because we're only using a smaller amount of RAM. And the other solution is to have multiple levels of power in RAM. Right? So usually applications, the point here is that, or the motivation here is that usually applications don't use the whole RAM bandwidth. So if we're not using the whole RAM bandwidth, we can probably make the RAM slower and then save some power, right? So it turns out that for all these solutions, there is publication. So here I will focus on the publications that are concerned about my dissertation. So the first one is external caching from March 94. The problem there was it was simulation, and there were a couple of problems. First, it didn't identify some challenges of implementing something like this in a real system. And also, there were some overestimations of the savings that an external caching system could have. In the case of the multi-disk systems, the problem with this is that they tried to do a greedy power saving by having just a single cache disk and then copy everything there, but then there is no proportionality because when that disk doesn't support all the load, then all the disk has to turn on again. In these cases, in both cases, the problem is still the idle power. Even though we are able to save some active power, the idle power is still there, and they're basically not solving that idle power problem. So let's move on. So, well, here I go with the problem statement of the dissertation. So we aim to reduce energy consumption of computer systems. I mean here disks and memory, by pursuing three complementary research directions. First, we design a multi-disk energy proportional storage system using commodity devices. And then we design and implement an energy efficient storage system using flash, that in this flash would be used as external cache to reduce energy consumption in disk and also RAM. These are actually two different systems I represent, or solutions. And then we design and implement a new mechanism to eliminate the blocking read page operation due to page write that could otherwise distort a disk in their low power. Or even slow down applications. So I will explain more details about this later. Here I list my contributions by trying to solve the problems I presented before. So first, Exos is a new energy efficient external cache storage system that basically uses these flash to cache, prefetch, and buffer blocks to leave the disk alone for a long time, and so that the disk can sleep and save some power. In the case of hybrid memory, the idea is similar, but in this case, we want to introduce this flash in order to reduce the size of the memory and save some of the idle power I said that could be a problem. The third contribution is related to these two. In these two cases, I'm using flash, right? So it's important to do a smart or to use a flash in a smart way. There are some challenges of writing to flash, so we need to be careful there. And that's what the flash write optimizations is about. We also talk about the non-blocking writes. We identify the fetch before update problem. I think this is a small discussion, and I'll talk about that later. And finally, we have SRC Map, which is a new low overhead energy proportional storage system. Right? I will talk about that later. So next, I will talk about all the main contributions, all of them except flash write. I think the rest of them deserve more time, and they are, I think, the main contribution of the dissertation. So So let's start with excess. The external, the idea here is that we, by adding this additional class, we want to increase the disking activity by caching, prefetching, and write buffering in the flash device. Now, the problem is that applications usually change their working set or how they use data, so we need to adapt to, to those changes. That's the second goal. And third, we need to ensure that we can find the data we're writing in the flash when the system crashes or there is a power out. So it's important to keep the consistency in all system states. I have here a small example of what excess will do. So I have here four components, the disk, flash, and the application, and the operating system. So what excess will do is that it will redirect IOs to flash if the data is available in flash. Otherwise, it will go to a normal path, and the disk will be bothered. So if the disk is sleeping, it will be turned on. And here, we have some periodic reconfiguration that move data between flash and disk just to adapt to new changes in the working set. So this is a small sample of what would happen, what would be the disk activity with vanilla, aggressive caching, and excess. Just an example. So in the vanilla case, there are some periodic accesses, probably some flushing, probably something else. In the case of aggressive caching, the idea is to cluster some of these periodic accesses together and leave room for the disk to sleep, but because the memory is not big enough, then there can be probably some misses, some read misses that the disk has to serve in the middle of these idle times. With excess, given that the memory is bigger and also is persistent, we can give you more room to the disk to sleep, and then save even more power than the aggressive caching cycle. So, well, some results, quick results. So we implemented this and did some evaluation. First, we found that excess could deliver energy savings between 2% and 14% across developer office and some server workloads. And what we found is that using the flash can impact the IO performance of some write-intensive applications. Okay, so let's move on to hybrid memory. Well, the problem here is that, I forgot to change this, idle power, I also call it static power. So the problem here is that the idle power dominates when the memory bandwidth is not fully utilized. Now the question is, well, if the memory is not fully utilized, why don't we just pull out some memory and let the disk serve the rest? And well, the problem there is that even though the memory is not fully utilized, the disk probably cannot serve or doesn't have the bandwidth to serve those code pages that are in that sub-utilized region of the memory, right? And if these if these code pages are big enough, then most of the power will be idle power, right? So let's see how we can solve that. Just to motivate a little bit the data. Oh, by the way, I am in slide 9. Just to motivate a little bit the data, we have this graph for 2 workloads. I have like for 10 workloads, but two is good enough for the presentation. So the idea here is that 20%, in this case 20%, for instance, SS, 20% of the time are access 80%. 30% of the pages are accessed 80% of the time. Right? So there is a big locality, and that means that there are some call pages that workloads. So let's see what we do in hybrid memory. This is the commodity, how it is right now, and this is how we are proposing to do it in hybrid memory. So I'm on slide 10. So in the commodity case, applications access memory through the virtual memory, And the virtual memory is in charge of, if the page is in RAM, then you just access directly. If it's in disk, then you should load it to RAM transparently to the application and so on. The operating systems usually access RAM directly. There is no virtual memory for them. In the hybrid memory case, what we want to do is to replace some of the RAM. See that there are four RAM here. We pull out three, for instance, and replace those with a bigger flash. Okay? And then we hide that hybrid configuration from the rest of the system, including the operating system. Okay? That's what we call the hybrid memory. And then the rest just works as expected. So, as I said, the idea is to replace some RAM with a large energy efficient flash. And inside this hybrid memory, we will use paging just as a traditional virtual memory. So, by virtualizing the operating system accesses to the hybrid memory, we're also, for instance, we give the operating system the chance to put buffer cache pages there so that you know the flash also holds those pages. And now with less RAM, we also have less static power, less idle power, right? So we can save some of the power.
Can I ask you a question?
Right.
So how different is this your architecture from a, let's say from a system where you are using less memory and using a large flash for a cloud partition?
For
a
cloud partition.
How different is that?
Right. So well, I guess the main difference here is that we give the same chance to use a flash to pages that would go to the swap as well as pages that would go to the file system, right? So in the case you're talking about, the only pages that will go to flash will be only pages that are anonymous, like the stack or the heap, right? In this case, pages that are on the buffer cache or the file system will also go to flash, right? So we give same opportunity to both kind of pages. Yeah?
Another quick question. What sort of cost differential is there between the DRAM and the flash?
Oh, there is a big cost. Actually, RAM is also more expensive than flash.
Per unit.
Per gigabyte, yeah.
Can you repeat the question if somebody asks one?
Oh, sure. There were two questions. So the first one is, what was the difference between hybrid memory and a system with flash as swap? So what I said is that in this case we give the opportunity to both anonymous and file system pages to be in flash. And the other question was what was the difference between the RAM price and the flash price? Okay. So it turns out that the RAM is much more expensive than flash.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so let's talk about the next solution. This is called non-blocking writes, and what we want to do here is to control the IO traffic with non-blocking writes. So controlling the IO traffic is important in Nexus and hybrid memory. In hybrid memory, we want to reduce the performance impact of having less RAM. So controlling the amount of IO that goes to flash is important. And in the case of Nexus, controlling the IO traffic would also allow for longer idle periods of time for disk to sleep. Right? So basically here, the problem starts with the memory access granularity. Right? And it turns out that the memory access granularity is much smaller than disk. It's usually 8 bytes. You access 8 bytes of memory versus 4K or 8K of disk. Right? So if you want to update some block, usually you have to fetch the whole block. And that's the next slide. You have to fetch the full page or block the full page and merge the 8 bytes that you want to change, or in this case the application wants to change. So I have a small example of what happens here on a vanilla system. So I have three components, the process that is trying to do the write, the backing store, which could be disk or could be a RAID or could be a flash, okay? And the operating system. Right? So first the application tries to do a write to a page that is not in memory. So what happens there is that because it's not in memory, the OS is called. Okay? And Then the OS issue a read to load the page in memory. Then the page is loaded. And finally, the control is returned to the process. Right? So now the question, well, the write can go through right now. So the question here is, well, if we are doing if the application or the process is doing a write, why does it have to wait for some data that it doesn't need? So in this case, it has to wait for the read to occur. It turns out that we found this problem in not only in Linux, but also in BSD and Xen.
Why is waiting a problem? Why not just wait?
Well, I mean, waiting, if you don't wait, you have some benefits. You can you can better utilize the backing store. Because with more IOs, you better utilize the bandwidth of the backing store. And also, now the process can move forward with its processing without waiting for some IOs that it has to wait for.
I guess my question is, how long is that wait that you're talking about here?
Well, I mean, compare...
I mean, is that a long wait, or if it's a really short wait, then I might as well wait.
Yeah, well, I guess compared to the memory access alone, waiting for IO can be a substantial amount of time, right?
So in this case, you don't have to wait for the disk to send a page. You can just grab a page and write to...
Exactly. That's the idea.
How does it relate to HM, though?
Well, the thing is that in having memory, because we're pulling some RAM out, right? Mm-hmm. Now there would be some accesses that instead of going to RAM before, now they're going to flash. So even though flash is really fast, it's not fast enough compared to RAM, right? So by controlling the IO, the traffic to flash with this, with non-blocking writes, we're able to remove some of those waiting times. That I mean, waiting time to flash, which will take a long time compared to RAM. Right. So we're basically converting some accesses that before took microseconds, right? Because we're asking to flash. We're converting those to just the time of memory in order of magnitude.
I think that should be the motivation for this. Because you are reducing the size of VRAM, and because of that, you have longer latency while space are out in the VRAM. But in a typical system, you only have VRAM and a disk, and if you are considering that there's only one process running there, then chances are that process or working set can be fit in the VRAM, so the problem does not exist. But if you have many processes in the system, then when one process is blocked, the other process can be scheduled. So it's still it's not that big a problem. It does depend on the environment. So I think the problem is mainly because we are reducing the size of the RAM.
Okay.
Can you repeat it for the people on the phone?
So let me see if I understand. So what you were saying is that there was a problem with the motivation here.
Yes.
Because when you have multi-processes system, then it doesn't matter if one of the processes have to wait because the other one can utilize the device, right? Well, I mean, that's true. I don't know. I guess it depends on the application. So, well, one thing I can think of is that, for instance, in this particular case, I guess it's not, well, could be related to, if you're using, for instance, a hypervisor on top of this, installing the, if there is an overcommit of memory, and you try to access a page which is not in memory, then, the whole virtual machine will have to wait for that page to be fetched, right? Even though there are processes ready to run inside that virtual machine, right? So that could be, at least that could be one good motivation. Was that mentioned?
Then there are other virtual machines that can be scheduled, right? If you really make each virtual machine memory so small, that's because you want to have higher consolidation. And if you have higher consolidation, then you can always have virtual machines to be scheduled. But one has to wait. So the trade-off is whether you give a virtual machine enough memory to hold this working set, so you don't have to swap that much. And simply in a number of transition, why do you give enough memory so that the process doesn't have to use swap that much? But when you prefer to consolidate more virtual machines, so more applications, then you have to give each one less memory, then you have to use swap. But as a result, when one is blocked because waiting for data from swap, you can always schedule the others because you're highly consolidated.
That's fine, but I guess, you can always, if you have something like this, then you can consolidate even more, right? Because now you can run much more VMs than before, right?
Yeah, I guess I just put in my mind, about career, what will be the advantage of this architecture, okay?
So you're talking about heavy memory, or you're talking about number of bytes?
This is based on the heavy memory, right? Is it?
It is. Okay. It started like that, but we have found a lot of uses for.
But here the memory still can be flashed.
Can be flashed, yeah. Okay. Actually, can be anything.
I just have usability of this. If you really want to generalize it, okay.
Right.
Have something.
Okay, so before this was the vanilla case. So let's talk about what non-blocking writes would do. This is a basic approach. So before we just tried to or the process tried to write to memory that is not in or to a page that is not in memory. Then it goes to MIS again to the operating system. But now instead of sending or issuing the request to the backing store, the operating system will create a patch, right, of the changes that the process is trying to do to the page. Then the operating system will issue the IO, and finally will return the control to the process. Right? So in you see that in these steps, the process doesn't have to wait for any IO. Then once the backing store is completed, the backing store complete the IO, the operating system can merge the chains. Right? So benefits of using something like this is the application execution time will be reduced. The application doesn't have to wait for some of the IOs. Which can be a big gain if the application is mostly write intensive. It increases the backing store bandwidth usage as we have more sending IOs in the scheduler, there is better scaling, and also we use the parallelism of the device, either read or flash. And third, we will reduce the latency on private memory accesses now. So we can close the gap between the vanilla case and the hybrid memory case. And then in case of access, we will not interrupt the power of disk, right? So you can save
some. I have some questions. So in order to operating system to write the patch, that
right.
means that it needs to grab another empty page to write the contents, right?
Well, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing right now is to allocate as much memory as we need for that specific patch. Remember that usually applications write in 8 bytes, so we can just allocate 8 bytes instead of a whole page.
Okay.
Just to make a clarification there, applications could write more if they're writing to the file system buffered pages.
Yes.
And so it could be more than 8 bytes.
It could be more, yes. It could be more. If we continue writing to a page that is not in memory, then we have a queue of patches that we need to apply at the end.
But
Is it possible for another process on the same process to give a read between set 6 and 7, or are they guaranteed to take place
between 6 and 7? Yes. So right now, if there is a read between 6 and 7, we'll wait for this to complete, right? But there is an optimization that if the process reads something that is in the patch, we can return that data, right? Directly without waiting for a read.
So following up on Ming's question, it seems that there's a difference in utilization versus response time, even if there are multiple processes, which was really his concern.
The utilization versus the response time.
So the response to that particular process may be quicker because of the shortcut that you're making.
Right.
While utilization is still as good in the sense of so this suggestion was if there are multiple processes, you can switch processing. And
right.
So the utilization is still as good, but then the response time will go down.
Yes. Yes. That's true.
So perhaps that's the right answer. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any training where these have to support the feasibility of this? Because I guess one of the reasons that the operating system does not do something like this is because it assumes there's locality, and when a portion of page is assigned, chances are the other portion will be attached too.
Right.
So it does not help much to wait for the whole page to be loaded, because subsequent attaches can be much faster. Mm-hmm. If locality is always there, it's always good, then the improvement that you can get on doing this is probably marginal. But on the other hand, I imagine there'll be a lot of overhead to track, to first the general patches for every class potentially have a general patch. And then for subsequent reads, because page is now there, you have more page faults. So I imagine there'll be more overhead if locality is good.
Okay.
And especially in a higher consolidated system you are targeting, so let's
So first you talk about the feasibility.
Yes, if you have traces to support by that, maybe a certain percentage of the data sizes can be improved using this technique because of the lack of time.
Yeah, actually this is at this point somewhat implemented, and I think we're close to finish, and we have some preliminary results, and I remember that there was a decrease in a OLTP like of workload that did some transactions in memory. There was a reduction of 50% of execution time. Mm-hmm. So there are some gains. First, it's feasible, and second, there are definitely some gains there. Even though the application we were trying was multi-thread, right?
So that means for that particular application, it's accessing pages randomly, and as a result, this can...
Yeah, but I guess your concern was about having multiple page files to the same page.
The overhead of doing this,
right?
You have quick patches. You have tried all the write and quick patches.
Right.
And then before the pages are ready, then the following attached to three pages you have three reports which you have to handle.
Right.
And what are the benefits of
this? Right.
So can I suggest that we come back to this question after
okay.
you finish the presentation? Because it is interesting
yeah.
and you probably need a lot more time to answer this question.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's move on to the last solution. And this talk about the energy proportion of storage. Well, first, the storage load is usually low. It's between 10 and 30%. But still, because, as we said, because the amount of power consumed is almost constant, it will consume the peak power. It will consume the peak power, right, of the storage system. And the reason is 10 to 30% is that because usually people over-provision for much higher peak loads, even though the average is much lower.
Does load mean capacity or bandwidth?
Bandwidth.
Bandwidth?
Yes. So, CPUs are more energy proportional than storage, and that's the problem we saw before. And the consolidation is a well technique, well known technique for energy proportionality in virtualized servers. So the question is that can we use a storage virtualization layer that will export logical volumes and put them on physical disks to design a practical energy proportional storage system? And the storage virtualization IN direction would be useful to do that. But then the challenge is that we need to move just the minimum amount of data that we need in order to low overheads. Moving complete logical volumes just does not make sense because it can take a long time. It could be very expensive. So here I have an example of what ExoCMAP will do. So first, this is the logical volumes that this storage virtualization manager is exporting. And here's where ExoCMAP will be implemented. This layer will receive some requests with a pair volume LDA, and then it will do some indirection to the right place in the physical volume. So in SRC map, we will save some scratch space on each physical volume. Okay? Then we will detect working sets of each physical volume. It's not the whole disk; it's just the pages that were used in some period of time. Then we will create replicas of each of these working sets in all the physical volumes in the scratch space. For instance, we're creating a replica of the working set C in this disk and a replica of the working set E in this scratch space, right, in the first disk, and well, so on. We create a replica for every working set. Then, if the load is low enough, we can turn off this disk. And now, given that we have all the working sets in these two disks, we can serve all the data from these disks. Right? Okay, so we were able to implement a prototype of SRC map. It wasn't a re-implementation. And with some mail, NFS, and web server, a combination of all of them, assuming a logical volume for each of them, we were able to power off half of a system with 8 disks. Right? And that had a savings of 35% of energy.
How fast is performance
Excuse me?
How's performance impact?
Oh, the performance in this case, it turns out that the performance, there were two parts, right? If we let the performance assist, there was a big, I don't have the graph here, unfortunately, but we did a CDF of latency, and it turns out that some of the ions get very impacted in the performance. And the reason, we found that the reason was because of the synchronization ions. That is, we need to synchronize the working sets, right? Once we remove that part, it turns out that the latency was very, very similar. So it seems like in this work, it's very important to schedule those synchronization IOs in the right time. Otherwise, foreground IO can be impacted.
Now, how do you measure power
for the disk? The setup was, I set up a machine, and I remember that I put some controllers, some SATA controllers, at least for 8 disks, and then I connected a power supply just for the disks, right? So I could isolate the rest of the system.
So you power supply to the controller on the disks?
The power supply was feeding the disks only, right? But I was connecting the SATA port to the machine itself.
So the disks have power sockets? This
have
independent power. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I just measured the power of that.
The power supply.
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk about what is done right now. So XSS and SSC map were implemented and evaluated, and we evaluated for performance overhead and some power savings. And well, we have two publications of this. XSS was in 2008 and SSC map on 2010. So the question is then, what do we have for future work? There are three systems that are complete right now: the hybrid memory, the flash drive optimizations, and the non-blocking writes. So, well, the thing is that the designs are pretty mature by now. I think mainly non-blocking writes. And in all these systems, what is missing is mostly evaluation. So the problem usually here is that I need an implementation to evaluate, and that can take a long time. So, well, for each of them, we need to answer questions like feasibility with the design that we have, or we have to change some design, the performance impact, and also the power savings. So let's see the future work for hybrid memory. Well, we need to implement hybrid memory and commodity operating system and hardware. We want to answer the following questions first. We need to see if the SSD is able to support all the call pages that were served from the RAM before. Now, how much power is hybrid memory able to save? What is the application performance because of using this kind of architecture? And finally, how that performance changes as we change the load of the system. In terms of flash drive optimizations, I think this is probably straightforward. We need to implement the optimizations and then compare them to some other, well, first compare them to, for instance, the way that operating system write to flash when used for swap, for instance. Also compare our new, we also have a new replacement algorithm that we need to compare with LRU or ARC, but also with CFLRU, for instance, which is a replacement algorithm designed specifically for flash. It's in my proposal, but it's not here. I thought that, I mean, this was not a main question.
Yeah,
so. In the non-blocking rights case, we built a simulator and evaluated the non-blocking rights idea. It was published in this June.
You may want to talk about the workloads that we
In this case, yeah. So in this case, we use there is a benchmark suite called Acapo, and that Acapo has many developer and server workloads. So the developer workloads were mainly, for instance, testing of some code. So I think was testing for Eclipse, a bunch of test cases, and for servers, there were OLTP-like workloads, and I think it was mostly that. Okay, so we want to implement non-blocking writes for POSIX interfaces for write and MMAP, and we want to prove feasibility by doing this implementation in a commodity architecture like x86. And we also need to consider consistency and correctness, given that we are reordering some of the operations now that they were happening sequentially before. So in terms of the milestone, what I was planning is to finish non-blocking writes by January, and then implement and evaluate flash write optimization by February, and finally implement an hybrid memory and complete the evaluation by July. And a couple of things here. First is that I want to finish these two first before this, because we can use both of these products in hybrid memory. And the other thing is that hybrid memory, I allocate big time for hybrid memory because this product has proven to be, very hard to implement. So I thought it was works fine. Okay, so in summary, I present the importance of solving the energy problem in distant memory. We propose some solutions to use more to use disks and memory more efficiently in terms of energy. And from all the solutions, Exos and SSC map are completed, but we still need to complete some implementation, like flash, right, optimization of locking nuts and hybrid memory. And finally, I will try to complete the remaining project by July of 2012. So this is just a list of publications I've done in the PhD. So the first two has a question mark because they are not ready yet, but we are in the process of preparing this. And Suriname blocking device was the last one. This was the non-blocking drive one. Then SRC map was a proportional one. Some board and finally Exos, which is the external caching for any efficient solar systems.
So who's the first author for
SRC
map?
SRC map is Akshat Verma. He's a collaborator from IBM India. Okay, so well, the acknowledgement first, the research committee, thanks for taking the time to go through my dissertation. And finally, my collaborators that helped me a lot with all my papers, first writing, which is twice in the acknowledgement. Ricardo, Jesus, which is not here, unfortunately, Jorge, and also Chef, that helped me a lot. So, well, with this, I conclude my presentation, so questions.
So at this point, we are open to taking questions from the audience, and of course, including the committee. Basically, anyone present here as well as on the phone.
Yeah.
So for the non-blocking rights project, so at some point you have to create a patch, right?
Yes.
And the patch might be a complete page.
The patch may be a complete page. Well, it could be, okay.
Right, or let's say three quarters or almost a complete page.
Okay.
And so at some point you may use up to twice the memory that you originally had to use because of
right.
the patch.
Right.
Right. So what impact will that have on an already constrained memory system? Because you're proposing substituting a lot of memory for a
you're trading off memory for
flash.
For
higher so your memory environment is going to be already constrained, and you're a part of those constraints that you already mm-hmm. post. You're going to use additional memory to create those paths.
Right. So, I guess for that we are still researching. The closest answer that I have right now for that is that in the paper we had, we found that we calculated how much or how many simultaneous non-blocking drives we will have, right? It turns out that it was pretty small for most of the workers.
And what's the size of those, right?
Because
the worst case is when you have almost a complete page, but a little bit
yeah.
down, right? If you have the whole page, you can just write it.
That's fine. So, I don't know. I remember that it was less than 40 simultaneous non-blocking writes. So if you multiply that for 4K by 4K, it's not much, right?
What do you mean? So you're saying that the number of writes is small.
Yes. I mean, the number of outstanding of simultaneous non-blocking writes is small.
And that also means the improvement would be small.
No, it's not because even though it's simultaneous, probably while the application is executing, there were a lot of non-blocking writes. Right? I mean, the application is executing, you have one non-blocking write, then you have another one, but they don't happen all at the same time.
Okay. My main question is still with locality, because if there's as I have to be really good locality, if there's some level of locality, then there will be a lot of overhead, because For subsequent writes, simply you have to generate patches again,
right.
And you have to consolidate the patches.
Right.
And then for reads, we should be already there, but you would have additional, you know, many additional base faults, which would be very expensive.
But the question is how expensive would that page faults would be? iOS is usually very expensive, right? So the question is how would that page fault overhead would be compared with the I/O that we're saving?
Just one page.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, if,
that's also you know, it's free fetching. That's even greater locality.
Can you show some of the data you have?
You mean what kind of data?
Whatever data you have. I mean, you already have a paper published, right? Can you show some data from that paper?
Yeah. So, I don't know what kind of data can I
import
that.
Even with the non-blocking writes on reach, you will have just one page fault, right? It will be the same page fault, just delayed. So you will not have more page fault than before.
But means point
no.
That page that's already in memory, so that read page fault you wouldn't import.
I mean, we do have additional page faults. The thing is that,
So let me understand. So you're saying your concern is that there may be more overhead for processing additional page faults.
Page faults and also the patch, the fine patch. We have many writes for the same page.
Right.
As
I said first, I don't know what is the overhead of having a page fault. That's probably important.
There will be one additional page fault for read.
Yeah,
that will block the whole process.
Yes. In case for writes,
unless the read can be serviced from the patch.
From the
patch. The read won't block either.
Yes. Right now we'll block. So as we have it right now. But yeah, we can have that optimization. I guess in case of the writes, it doesn't matter. I was thinking that probably it doesn't matter the overhead that you have because of the page fault. Given that all that is happening in the background.
It would be good to have a number in terms of time. What is the cost of handling?
I think that would help out.
Lewis, can you talk a little bit about how you handle synchronous versus asynchronous writes and how you identify them and for the non-blocking write book?
Synchronous and asynchronous. So you. What do you mean? What kind of writes?
If the write is a synchronous write onto a certain page, then you won't be able to do non-blocking, or you should not be doing it.
So you're talking about, for instance, the fsync interface, right?
Yeah.
Right. So actually, for that, the way we are fixing that is if we have an fsync, if the application asks for that page to be flushed to disk, or the operating system will wait until that non-blocking write is complete, right? So in that case, the non-blocking write will block and won't be non-blocking write anymore.
And how do you identify this? Is it easy to identify for every write that comes through, whether it is part of an asynchronous call or a synchronous call?
Well, in the case of in the interface of Unix, the write doesn't guarantee that the data will be written to disk, right, permanently. For that, the application has to call an fsync. And if it's calling an fsync, the operating system will know that page have to be persistent in disk, right? So that's how we detect that we need to wait until that is done.
Actually, there is no flag or something that when you open the file, you can specify if it's open in asynchronous mode.
I don't know about that. In that case, I know that there is the OAuthDirect. I don't know if there is something else.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know about that. So I guess in that case, we would have to disable non-blocking rights for that file. Actually, for that file descriptor, if we see that the file descriptor is in OSync, we don't do non-blocking rights, but we just follow the normal path.
I see. Okay. I think it would be good to have that discussion up front.
Yeah.
That how you are identifying these things and then how you are disabling or enabling the non-blocking rights.
Yeah, yeah.
And while I have the line, can I ask one more question?
Go ahead.
So in case of SRC map, you're saying that you would have the working set sitting on different disks and you would replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
How often does the working set change in your experiments? Are you making an assumption that it's not going to change for a long time, or if it changes, you will detect it and then re-replicate?
I guess we are assuming that the working set will remain constant for a long time. I think it was 8 hours. And the reason we assume that is that we did some experiments and some analysis on some traces. And we found that the data didn't change much with after 8 or even, I think it was even days. So we assumed that was a safe assumption to do. Okay? In case there is an access to a page that is out of the working set, we just have to wake up that disk and get the data, right?
How long does it typically take to wake up the disk?
It takes in the order of seconds. It can take the order of seconds, but in the experiments we had, that didn't happen very often. I think in 8 hours, we did experiments with the most active 8 hours of the whole traces, of 24-hour traces, and there were only 2 misses. So I think it doesn't happen very frequently, at least in the traces we have.
I see. Okay, I have one or two other questions, but I would let others ask, and I can ask them later.
Okay.
I have a very simple question.
Okay.
How did you measure the power of the exact power for the RAM and the storage?
For storage, I used in the case at least of SRC map, I use a separate power supply for that disk. So I just measured the power of that power supply, and that was it. In the case of Access, we use the ACPI interface of the laptop, and we measure the power there. And in the case of memory, actually at this point we don't know how to measure the power separately. So that's one thing we have to do.
So that's manufacturer information,
okay.
Right?
So when you said
there's a 35% power saving and etc., are you talking about the disk power or are you talking about the overall power saving of the computer?
I guess I'm talking about the disk or memory power savings, but at the end that will result in some savings of the system itself. And I also point out in the introduction that by saving power in these components can be substantial for the whole system, given that their power share is weak. Right?
Okay. Now the other question that may come up is that in trying to do the video, whether one of the major components of the power is the CPU cycle. So in trying to reduce the disk power or the memory power, are you increasing the CPU power cycle? So that's why I'm wondering that
did you measure
simultaneously the CPU power and the disk power and compare that how much overhead you added on the CPU side?
I see. So I remember that in Excel it wasn't the overhead of the CPU wasn't very big. I think we didn't have any problems there. In SRC map, I guess we didn't have that problem either. It although was a prototype, right? It was not re-implementation, so I don't know what we have in the re-implementation. But usually in these kind of systems, we only do indirectional files. And usually indirectional files is very easy, just to look in a map and find the location in the flash and do the I/O there, right? So I don't think that the CPU will be a problem.
Okay. And what will happen if all the storage in 10 years down the road becomes flash?
Okay. Okay. Well, in that case, that's a good question. Well, first, I don't know. I find it hard that all the storage will be flash. I guess at some point it probably will. But yeah.
Why can't you apply this as environment to save power from flash in the power down flash devices?
That's true, but I mean the idle power of flash is so low that probably it's not worth it.
Because capacity is low. In the other road, we have not much bigger flash. We have
that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. The difference between active and idle is so high in the flash plant that it's so much more worth
it. That's probably true. Yeah. I mean, well, what? The other committee members are answering is that if given that the difference in active and idle power of flash is so big, probably it would make sense to apply the same techniques for flash at some point as well.
Okay.
I think the hope is that by the time every storage is flash, Lewis would have graduated.
Yeah. That's true.
Okay,
thank you.
In
Dashing Mike,
do you complete turn off
the
idle disk, or you consider different levels of
spin
speed?
No, actually it was on and off. I think that this multi-speed doesn't
power off the disk. You just spin it down, right?
Spin it down, yeah. Actually, if you power off, you have to reboot the machine.
So spin down at low speed.
Well, not all speed. Well, yes, a lower speed by zero.
It's the controller are on, but the disk is not spinning.
Yeah, I mean the control is on in case an access comes, but the disk is just not spinning. It's not protected. Okay. Yeah. So there is a command to you can send a command to the controller to stop the rotation.
Nice.
Yeah.
So just a comment.
Vladimir
was saying that
the
magnetic disk has a limited
length
cycle.
Yes.
And,
it does.
The problem is being up and down.
Yes, it does. So we didn't do much about it. I remember that I knew it at the time, but the thing is that we were doing this study on laptops, and usually laptops disks tolerate much higher number of spin up and down cycles. So in that case, I think we didn't think was wrong. In the case of SRC map, which uses commodity SATA devices, I think in laptops was something like 300,000 spin ups. And in normal SATA was something like 30,000. Mm-hmm. I remember that in SRC map, the spin up and down didn't happen much. for us, because we didn't have many meters, right? So we didn't have to spin out in the middle of a cycle too much. And the other thing is that the cycle was long enough to not doing that very frequently. I remember that we did probably some calculation, and it took like 100 years or something to run out this basically. So Kashik, do you have a question?
No, it's not a question. I just took the comment. But first question, are you aware of the speak power?
Excuse me, say that again.
Speak power, S-P-E-C power.
Oh, right. So so we have tried to use that benchmark in several products, and for some reason, I think mainly in hybrid memory, but because we haven't been able to have implementation ready, I guess we haven't been able to do it. But yes, I am aware of spec power.
Okay. If you look at the spec power benchmark, etc., there is a, to get into the power business kind of thing, there is a specific couple of meters they have that is specified in the spec power website that only can be used for this kind of for the standardization purposes. So you may want to look into that.
Okay.
And how to, and there are specific ways on how to measure the power of the computer just to show that
increasing
robot improvement.
Okay.
So you may look into that details.
Okay. Bit. Okay.
Any other questions or comments from the audience? Okay, if not, then we'll transition into a closed room session. We'll do this and the committee members. Have Lewis and the committee, the PhD committee, and you know, the purpose of this session is to ask questions to Lewis that you might not want to reveal to the audience who is here. I'm not sure what sort of questions those would be, but we've had this session for a long time, so we continue to have this session. But yeah, I mean, we could use this session as an opportunity for more specific suggestions and concerns that you might have with the general direction of Lewis's dissertation. And we could also use this session for Lewis to be taking notes as to what kind of things he should be addressing in the remaining time that he has.
Well, I guess the first question is about SRC map. It has other contributors. What exactly was your contribution? And is this work likely to be in other dissertations also?
Likely to be in our dissertations, I don't think so. The other contributor was Ricardo from here. And Ricardo is focusing his dissertation on something else. That's the first thing. And the second thing about the contribution, I remember that I was in some of the design meetings. And what I remember I worked mostly was on designing and implementing the prototype to do the evaluation. And mainly, you know, take numbers from there and so on.
The SRC map is done, right? It's not an item on the table with this anymore, right? Because the concern is because when people look at the publication, you are in the third author.
Right.
We know that you have done a lot of work.
Right.
To publish the status for outside of we have not the details if we have pictures when they agree to get the teaching.
Okay.
You see the access might is a
okay.
chunk of the material. I think that's a sure.
I mean, personally, I don't think that's a major issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very hard in a multi-author paper to compartmentalize contributions by different people. And as long as Lewis is not claiming something that he has not, you know, been involved with, according to me, it's okay to have that in the participation.
So how much percentage of the teaching will be? 50%?
So if we take that approach, then there would be hardly any joint work in the universe, right?
I think it can be articulated what your contribution is. Yeah, there are journals that explicitly require you to say in the acknowledgments that what work or what aspect of the work was handled by what person. So I think he answered it. He's answered the question. That he's done the using right in the design decisions, and then he did the implementation and the testing.
Okay.
So I think that much is acceptable.
Yeah, I think the concern is with external persons who might be looking at his dissertation and then comparing his position and the relative publication.
That is fair. I think at this point for this committee, it's really a matter of saying whether it's appropriate for it to be in this dissertation and what it is also in the other dissertation, just to pick an example. Then how would we handle the situation and how would we allocate contributions? So in that sense, it's an important part of the discussion. And secondly, if you based on what you said, it seems like there's excess related work and there is SRC map related work. So it seems that there are two major contributions, or at least two major system contributions, implementations. And in that sense, one has to question how much he handles SRC map.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, I mean, Ricardo also contributed some implementation related things, I assume. So it would be good to specify that more
mm-hmm.
clearly,
mm-hmm.
what he has done.
Yeah.
At least write that down. Short paragraph. You say this was your, and this is how you participated in this process.
Okay.
Okay. Even if I haven't looked at the Ricardo's proposal yet, even if he does not say anything about the SRC map, the problem still exists.
Okay.
So for outsider, the other may think, well, this is the advisor's arrangement, and Lewis is taking credit from Ricardo. But we know that's not the case, right? So you need to articulate.
Okay.
Yeah. My other question is something that we already asked earlier, and that is, what if we try to combine these two ideas, the hybrid memory idea and the SRC map idea, but not necessarily to use SRC map on flash drives, but what if SRC map already exists in, let's say, the back end store, and you're trying to do a hybrid memory, what's the impact of one on the other? Is this something that you plan to look at? Is it worth looking at? Are there any implications?
I would love to look at it. My problem is that at this point, hybrid memory is incomplete. And I think hybrid memory will take a long time. I mean, that program has proven to take a long time. In terms of predicting what could be the impact of having both together, they are not exclusive. I think they can be used together. It seems to me like they are separate, some kind of separate products, and their target is different, right? One optimizes for disk and the other one optimizes for memory. So I guess they both will contribute to lower this 40% of server usage for these two components. So in terms of for the dissertation to look at this, I think it will take a long time. I think it would be hard.
I think one answer is that these are complementary. I don't see them as being conflicting, their goals being conflicting, or even their mechanisms being conflicting. Because they work at different levels, different layers. So, I mean, if I were to speculate, I would think that you could plug each of these systems independently. And
And in fact, I mean, if you look at the SRC map, SRC map would work on some kind of disk dedicated or a storage dedicated machine, and probably there are some hosts connected to that machine, and each of these hosts can have hybrid memory, right? So that could be a way that it works.
I wasn't clear about your distinction between non-blocking write implementations and this flash write optimization.
The flash write optimizations, I was concerned about that is because in excess and heavy memory we're writing to flash. It turns out that flashing to write to flash is not the same as writing to disk, right? And the reason is because the hardware is completely different. So there are two main concerns in flash. The first one is that if you write random random writes, then the performance of a flash goes down by a huge amount. I think it's probably 2x, or no, it's one order of magnitude. It's lower. The other concern is that flash has a limited number of available writes. So so we need to be careful how we write in order to make the flash last longer. So that flash optimizations, what I talked about was how we make those writes more sequential, for instance, in order to avoid this performance impact that I was talking about when doing random writes, and also how this will affect the reliability of the flash. Right? So, so it's completely separate from non-blocking writes.
So, Luis, I want to clarify one more thing. When you say that there are three systems which are incomplete, hybrid memory, flash write optimizations, and non-blocking writes,
right.
But later on you say that there are two papers in progress.
Yeah.
And I just want to clarify that if you map these three things into two papers, which of these were going in the same bucket?
Right. So, well, the thing is that in the flash optimizations was originally part of hybrid memory, and I guess we were going to keep it that way.
Okay.
So, but I realized that these flash optimizations can also be used for excess. So that's why I presented that way.
I see, but then are you going to redo the excess evaluation with some new flash optimization?
I could do that. I wasn't planning to, but ideally, I would reevaluate excess performance with these new flash write optimizations. And in the excess case, there were some we had some problems with high intensive workloads. And probably these flash writes optimizations would solve some of these problems. But I guess my point is that I have some more important things on my plate that would take a long time. So I prefer to focus on that first.
I already think that the plan is pretty ambitious, that you have three things to complete and then you have two more tables to write.
Right.
And I think, I don't know if the flash write optimizations may be exactly similar for the hybrid memory use case or the excess use case. But if they're not exactly similar, I would say focus on making it work well with hybrid memory and then evaluating that system in its entirety.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Another high-level comment I have is about the title of the thesis.
Okay.
It seems to me that there is and flash caching for energy efficient memory and storage systems. It's not very clear what it is trying to do.
Okay.
I would like to say that in most of your work, you are trying to optimize energy, but then you are also trying to either improve performance, such as non-blocking writes, mm-hmm. or you are trying to trade off between energy and performance.
Okay.
And it may be good to have
okay.
something which is more crisp to, I mean, something on the lines of saying optimizing disk and memory subsystems for energy and performance.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a recommendation for a title that Lewis did not quite
yeah.
agree with, so he went with his own title. And your title like, it sounds like a little bit like the title that I told him.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I just when I read it, it doesn't give a good idea of what's coming, and I think it would be good to have something more appropriate, and it's fine to have something a little broad. You don't have to write all the keywords in the title
okay.
or all the details in the title.
Okay.
Yeah. I think paper titles are very different than thesis titles. So paper titles are much more focused. And your thesis, it's hard to capture all the things that you have in your thesis within your title.
Okay.
So you paint that with a, you know, broad brush and you know, focus on the general ideas.
Okay.
Than very specific ones.
I also have another suggestion. You appreciate, you have done great work and you have also good ideas that you want to implement. So I think you have a longer discussion about future work in a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a proposal. And, but that aside, I don't think you need to change it. But keep this in mind when you develop your dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
Because even for a dissertation, you want to not just conclude that the research you have done, how many years you have spent in FIU, but also as a researcher, what will be your vision for the next 5-10 years.
Okay.
Okay. So it would be valuable to have a good discussion on future work.
Okay.
The future directions, the vision, things like that, and, even your dissertation, 10-20 pages.
Okay.
Because that may be something that will provide a guideline for you to become, to try on your own.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, if energy and performance are sort of two slightly different focus, foci for the thesis, then you argue well why energy is important and how it saves money, but in terms of performance, I don't think that there's a clear articulation of why it's important to address
okay.
the system.
I think that's a good point. Usually we take the importance of performance for granted.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good to spend maybe...
No, but here there are very specific performance issues that you're addressing, and so if it's non-blocking, if it's regular write mechanism in disks, then...
I guess the reason was that way is that, as I said, I mean, non-blocking writes started as a result of the performance impact we'll see on hybrid memory, because we are pulling out some memory and replacing with flash.
Yeah, and you should present it that way. I think that's
okay.
Much more effective. For why one should think about it.
Okay. I see. Yeah. So what I mean is that. The performance problems we are trying to solve are because of the trade-off that I'm doing of performance and energy, right? So we are trying to save energy and at the same time close the gap between my system and the vanilla system.
The other question that I actually asked Jorge was that this concept of hybrid memories. Whether they existed, in what form they existed, how is what you're proposing here something completely new? Is it revolutionary? If it is, then that's something you ought to be highlighting much, much more than
okay.
you have so far. It should be up in the title. It should be flashing all over the paper saying that
okay.
this is a new concept we are playing with and and we're trying to look at its impact on everything else.
I see.
So I'm not really sure. I don't have that historical perspective of where hybrid memories are. Maybe you can say something about it.
Okay. So I have seen a couple of things there. I mean, all scattered, but non-integrated solution like this one. So, for instance, I have seen solutions to put buffer cache in flash so that accesses to files are faster, and also solutions to make the swap stack aware of a flash and use that better. Now, in this case, I'm saying, okay, but actually, we shouldn't do these two, right? We should integrate these two, and now we can have the flash as an extension of the complete memory. So everything that is used, everything that the memory is used for, will also be in flash, right? So that's my point. I have seen a couple of publications that talked about hybrid memory. I see one that talked about a hybrid memory form.
If it is a sufficiently new concept, you may want to start with the motivation for that. Why would you want to think about hybrid memory? What was wrong before that you would like to think about hybrid memory, and what problem does it have?
Okay.
I haven't done intensive evaluation, but I think it's not a big deal. I mean, there's even decision that usage. Windows have a feature like this, and
right.
Starting a flash, and so with that, this piece really works up to you.
Yes, I think I need that. From, that's true. I need that.
But you've already done that survey, right?
Mm-hmm.
With respect to access. You know,
yes, I mean, in
access, but you might want to update that to include some newer work, because in your dissertation, you have to address related work until the point of filing your dissertation.
Right.
As opposed to related work until the point that you published a certain paper. Right. So you have, that's one thing you have to spend some more time when you write your dissertation, is to update related work. The other thing is to talk a little bit more about what Ming said. Hybrid memory, where, flash is used as an extension of memory. So far, in all I've seen, it's largely used for performance improvement because you save some of the disk access,
yes.
But not for
so
power.
So there are systems which have this?
Right, but it's more like a cache and not as integrated like...
Flash memories are sort of plug-in. So you plug it in and it improves the performance?
Right, but only for specific kinds of workloads. What Lewis is talking about is if flash is seamless, right, to the OS, that if you write the memory, it could go either to memory or on flash, but seamlessly, no matter what you put in it.
Yeah.
That kind of integration is not there. And of course, the application has been different. It's been mostly for performance and not
yes,
for power.
Yes, that's true.
I think you have to point that out.
Yes.
Sorry, what was that?
Most of the what so-called hybrid memory systems are targeting performance. And they do not argue that, we can reduce DRAM power by pulling out memory and having flash to take the load of what would otherwise consume a lot of power in DRAM. Right? So that the power angle has not been investigated.
So conceptually, I mean, physically it's still going to be a flash drive that you would stick into a USB port and the rest of the system would somehow put a memory and a flash together?
Is that
the conception?
Yes, and the idea is that. And the operating system will use that as part of the memory, as Ray said, seamlessly. And everything that's put in memory could be in memory and flash. Right? That's the idea.
One other related question is there any intellectual property involved here? Is this a sufficiently new concept? And if so, you should talk to I see here that Akshat has been, IBM has been involved in this, so you should figure that out soon before you think about publishing.
Okay.
Or putting it in your series.
actually have a hard stop in another 3-4 minutes because of a meeting at 10.
Okay, so
will it take longer?
No, I think
I can try to.
I think we are done. So let's unless there are other questions for Louis, we can have Louis leave the room and then we can, you know, the committee can discuss you know, any final thoughts that you might have, right, and wrap this up. So it should take more than 5 minutes, Ajay.
Okay.
You can leave this here and then you can come back.
Oh, okay.
I'll call you in later.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Well, okay, so Louis is leaving the room and. Okay. Can have our final discussion. Oh, thank you. Kaushik,
Okay,
so if you have any suggestions that you perhaps wanted to not be rude or not be confrontational with Louis about, you know, specifically recommendations for improvements in writing, presenting, verbal communication. You can let me know because I can use all of that.
My first concern is whether what he's proposing to finish it, whether it should be realistic or not. I have no sense.
Right. It's, as Ajay rightly guessed, this is, you know, he has this, you know, hands full with the remaining items. So the first question is, are the remaining items sufficient, right, according to you, or does he need to do more? That's the first question I have.
I think overall the remaining item and the existing work combined looks sufficient to me.
Yes.
Okay. And how about Kaushik? Me?
Will.
Okay. How about you, Kaushik?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good actually, because we should not look at the, just how much is left, because the way the proposal is done, and if you probably students present the proposal at a much advanced stage early. So I would think from the perspective of the student work.
No, I don't think they're concerned about the proposal. They're concerned about what is sufficient for, what is necessary and sufficient for a dissertation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You should not probably look at what has not been done, but we should probably look at from the perspective of what has been done and has to be done.
Yes.
Both. Together.
So what is your opinion, Kaushik? So you think it's adequate for a dissertation?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good, actually.
Okay. All right, so it seems we are in agreement with respect to that. Now, the other concern is whether Lewis's timeline is realistic or not. And I feel that he's the best judge. I told him, you know, set a timeline that you feel comfortable meeting, and that's what he did. And he also acknowledged that, you know, it's you know, there is a bunch of work that he still needs to do, and he has a certain priority list in mind as to what he wants to do first versus later. I feel that he can pull it off, based on what I've seen Lewis do in the past. And the major reason for why I say that is because a lot of the questions that, you know, usually set us back by a few months have already been addressed. And that is not to say that we won't encounter any unknowns going forward, but I think a lot of the unknowns have been tackled in each of these items. So that's why I feel a little more confident that Lewis will be able to meet this timeline.
Yeah, I mean, so what is the definition of meeting the timeline? Does that mean that he can finish these things and then submit a paper and then graduate? Or does it mean that we have to wait for the submission result to come and then we have to make a call based on that?
No, I think we don't have to wait for papers to be published, especially because he already has published some work. And as long as we are satisfied with the quality of those submissions, right, I think we can anticipate that those papers will be eventually published and you know, approve his dissertation based on the work that he has done, as opposed to having to wait for papers to get published. That's my take on this, and I would also like to hear your input.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he has two other papers. There's a decent chance that he'll have one more before he graduates. It's probably sufficient time to get another publication. That sounds like a reasonable step to graduate as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think this is a big issue. If we have not finished the SDG, I'm still longer.
Well, there are some attractions there are some attractions that will motivate
you
because he has apparently he has a job offer, and we can blame Ajay for that.
Industry.
I mean, as much as I would like to have him come sooner, I don't want it to be on the cost of his thesis.
So which is quite unusual that, you know, they made him an offer this September to join next September. I don't know how that works, but apparently that's something that's done these days.
So 1 or 2 months delay wouldn't be impossible? That's what I'm hearing there?
Well, I don't think we have to, you know, really worry about the VMware deadline that I mean, if he needs to postpone,
it's not like an academic position where, you know, there's sort of a more hard deadline to get out.
And I feel that he has to finish the work that we require him to do to wrap up his dissertation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, another way to think about it is if he were to look for an academic position, he'd be applying in December. He'd be applying in a month. So does he have enough work to present, say, for a faculty job?
Let's go to him.
Well, he's not going to be looking at a faculty job, so I don't think we have to worry about that.
Yes, I think having the sort of meeting the deadline means that he can submit the two papers and we can judge from the quality of the submission. I think that seems fine to me. We don't have to wait for the result because that makes the process a bit too long.
Yeah. I mean, since I'm requiring my students to focus exclusively on top-tier conferences, the review cycles are not predictable. It requires incorporating feedback more than once, and waiting for those papers to get published is, in my opinion, not a realistic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping he'll publish one more paper at least before he graduates. I think that's a reasonable thing to expect.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty good. Another comment I have is about the presentation.
Yes.
So I haven't read the thesis as yet. I think there may be more details in there. But one thing I feel that while presenting, Lewis tends to give more qualitative answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will be good to have more quantitative answers. For example, if somebody asks how faster is RAM as compared to SSD, instead of saying that it's really faster compared to SSD, it will be good to say that it takes 100 nanoseconds in RAM versus 50 microseconds in SSD.
Right.
So I think in some of the answers he gave, he was more qualitative and not as much detailed.
Yeah, I think that's certainly one aspect of his presentation that should be improved, which is to be more precise in presenting material and articulate about information and specifics, right? I think that's really important, especially in our job profile, which is research. So yes, I will certainly convey that message to him. Okay, so it seems like we are all in agreement to allow Lewis to continue his work and agree that his proposal is sufficient and his plan for dissertation is also sufficient. Okay, so I think with that we conclude this proposal presentation.
If I can add one more comment, I think maybe it was Ajay who said that the flash write optimization may not get done According to Luis, it's only a month's work based on this timeline here.
The flash drive.
If that is slow, then I think that we should insist on him finishing all three before he needs to finish or before he graduates,
right?
Rather than saying whether it's part of the two papers or not is a different matter for me. But the work ought to be completed.
I think we agree that he has to do all the items that he listed.
Yes.
But whether they get published in a conference or not is, we are a little more flexible about that.
Okay.
So he has to submit those papers. Right? I think that's the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
All the three items that
I have the papers prepared.
Yes.
Okay, guys, I actually have a hard stop. I have to leave to be able to make it with an o'clock meeting.
Thanks a lot for joining, and especially Kaushik. It's probably 1 a.m. in Singapore by now. So thanks for attending all of these. And I believe you have one. You're not part of the next one. So this was the last one for this semester. So thanks for attending.
Okay, thanks. You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.